Journalists can play a big role in finding out what goes on inside seemingly impenetrable sectors like big oil, big finance, and big clothing makers. The chemicals, fibers, dyes, and manufacturing, most likely they come from somewhere far away, and it might not be a safe place, as shown by the recent tragedy at a Bangladeshi factory. Well, one Bay Area woman decided to make sure she knew exactly where her clothing came from. She set out to live a year wearing clothes made completely within 150 miles of her home. In this story from our archives, KALW's Ali Budner brings us her story as today's radical idea.
So this is my coffee berry sweater, which is hand-spun wool from the Chileno Valley and also the Redwood Valley in Mendocino. My name is Rebecca Burgess, and I am a natural dyer and the author of a book called Harvesting Color.
Burgess is also the creator of a project called Fiber Shed. It's sort of like the concept of a watershed or a food shed. According to Burgess, it's an awareness of where one's clothing comes from. So, for 1 year, Burgess has pledged to wear clothes made from materials and labor, all sourced from within 150 miles of her home in Marin County. She's assembled a team to help her accomplish a pretty radical goal.
We are going to be going from seed to skin.
And what does that mean exactly? Well, now 8 months into her Fiber Shed wardrobe challenge, Burgess's home has transformed into what could be a museum exhibit for natural dyes and fibers. There are baskets and wood bowls dappling her living room, filled with balls of hand-spun and hand-dyed yarns, all slightly different shades of rich earth tones. The labels read like poems. Sky blue, indigo, winter fermentation, gray-brown, staghorn sumac, iron mordant, fall. And for each article of clothing Burgess wears, she knows where the animals were raised or where the cotton was grown, what plants were used to give it color, and who designed, knit, wove, and sewed it.
So my socks are made from Windrush Farms. And then my skirt is a color-grown organic cotton from Sally Fox's farm in the Cape Hay Valley.
Burgess now has about 18 garments in her personal Fiber Shed wardrobe. And yes, that does include the socks and the underwear. So right now, you might be thinking what many of Burgess's critics say when they first hear about her Fiber Shed wardrobe.
Like, yeah, no one else can do it, just you, and But then I remind them that it was only, 100 years ago, maybe even 200 years ago. And to this day, in many places in Asia and some places in Central Asia and even parts of Europe, people are living in fiber sheds.
It wasn't just homegrown aesthetics or a nostalgia for the simple life that led Burgess to take on this project. Burgess saw two pieces of a puzzle that needed connecting, a wealth of local resources and a lack of jobs in her community.
Well, we're importing wool from China and we're throwing it away in our own community. Why don't we have a friggin' mill, where people could be employed?
Once she started looking, she realized,
there's tons of fiber. Like, there's so much fiber, I won't even explore it all. In this year, we have a ton of sheep raised for meat, and they're getting sheared, but very little of their wool is getting dealt with or manipulated. And the number was 22,000 pounds is discarded in my county annually.
And beyond the raw materials, there's the dyeing process that takes place almost exclusively overseas. So Burgess traveled to Southeast Asia to see how denim, for example, is dyed to make our blue jeans blue.
285 million of our jeans in the United States are produced annually. That number is an annual figure. In the tributaries of the Pearl River in China.
In her research, Burgess says she's found that synthetic chemical dyes are one of the top polluters of freshwater resources on our planet.
And I saw a lot of it firsthand. I didn't see it all. I mean, there's so much to expose yourself to. And simultaneously, I was exposed to living, breathing fiber shed models. You know, I'd go to a remote village on the border of Thailand and Vietnam. There were women growing indigo, growing cotton, processing all of their own fibers, spinning them, carding, weaving, and dyeing them, and then wearing those clothes. And all of that was happening in a 20-mile radius of their, you know, teak hut that they were living in.
And this is the kind of model Burgess wants to replicate here.
There's 2,000 synthetic chemicals that are listed. Synthetic meaning these are not naturally occurring substances, those that are associated with finishing a garment. So formaldehyde and flame retardants are kind of the most famous and infamous, and there are studies on those. What goes in the body is such an awareness we carry, but what on the body, what is worn on it, what is absorbed by it, is somehow missing in action, we'll say. The research is not available, the awareness isn't there, the dots have not connected in our brains yet.
Burgess intends to create an alternative to the more harmful synthetic blues that you commonly find in blue jeans. She's starting her own one-acre indigo plant farm this year, and it fits into her bigger vision of building a sustainable clothing system that will last beyond the year of her experiment. But to do that, she'll have to build a mill, because there are actually zero cotton mills in this area, and just one for wool.
So in response to that, it was like, well, if it has to happen, it has to happen. And I'll do whatever I can to help make that happen.
Sounds radical, yes. But at one point, maybe so did the idea of farm to fork. So why not seed to skin? At least Burgess is trying it out where radical ideas like these tend to take root. For Cross Currents, I'm Allie Bednar.